Anything mentioned in this episode by Jacob Robinson or his guests is not legal advice or investment advice. All opinions are Jacob's and his guests alone. Nothing discussed today should be relied upon for legal or investment decisions. This show is solely for information and entertainment purposes only. Jacob and his guests are not your lawyers, nor are they investment advisors. Please work directly with a lawyer or investment professional.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Law of Code podcast. I'm excited to share today's episode. My guest is Ashish Chandra. Ashish has been in-house counsel in India for over 2 decades and is currently the general counsel of CoinSwitch, which is India's largest crypto trading platform. Prior to CoinSwitch, Ashish served at legal positions at various large tech companies that you might have heard of, like WhatsApp and Netflix. He has received a few awards, including Young Achiever in In-House Under 40 Years, and under his leadership, the legal team of Snapdeal won the e-commerce legal team award, and the legal team of CoinSwitch won the Unicorn Startup Legal Team Award. His interest in crypto dates to early 2014, when he wrote one of the first articles in India on Bitcoin. Ashish, welcome to the Law of Code podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I thought we could start with the landscape when it comes to Bitcoin, crypto, and Web3 generally in India. I was wondering if you could give an example or illustrate to everyone listening the number of crypto users, exchanges, Web3 projects, but maybe start at a high level how the regulation has evolved.
Yeah, let me first start by giving a broader context about India and its place in the overall blockchain and crypto ecosystem. As you know, India is the world's most populous country with more than 1.4 billion people. And around 65% of the population is between 15 to 65 years, which will be close to about a billion people. And I understand that the cohort or the target market for this industry is people between 15 to 65. So we have a potential 1 billion people market for you in India. You know, coming on the economic status, so India is currently the fifth largest economy in the world with over $3 trillion GDP, which is slated to become third largest economy with more than $5 trillion GDP in next few years. So this is a lot of money to be minted here in India. Coming to number of crypto users in India, well, there are no official figures as such. Various reports quantify the users between 50 million to 150 million. I mean, I also don't have any kind of a confirm, but I believe that somewhere in the middle it would rest as such. However, going by the September 2022 Crypto Adoption Index report of Chainalysis, India is ranked there as number 4, which actually is one rank above the US. So I think numbers are good with a huge potential of growth. You spoke about number of major crypto exchanges. Well, I think not much, but going by the number of crypto and NFT players in the newly constituted Bharat Web3 Association, which is an industry association for crypto industry in India, there are likely to be about 10 major players. I believe that the exact official number will be known when any official figure will be published by the Financial Intelligence Unit of India, as crypto players are now required to be registered as a reporting entity under the Indian Prevention of Money Laundering Law. So we'll wait for official numbers to come out, but given the strength in the industry association, could be around 10. And also other things about the focus of, let's say, Web3 projects being built in India, there is, I mean, quite a lot which we see in the news. And in fact, some reported articles say that there are close to about 500 Web3 startups who have raised billions of dollars in startup money over the last 2 years. In fact, you know, we at CoinSwitch have our own venture fund for Web3 space. And recently, we have supported the fundraising of about 12 startups. And it's just in about 6 months. And I think the other important statistics, if I were to add, is that the number of Web3 developer talent available in India. Certain reports say that India has a bit over 10% of the world's total Web3 developer, which puts India on a number 3 position. And an interesting fact, last year in 2022, in the Ethereum India event, more than 4,000 Web3 developers turned up for the largest Web3 hackathon in the world. and they made over 400 projects in just 24 hours. So that's the kind of talent ecosystem in India is, which will also thrive the crypto landscape of opportunities. Yeah.
As we're seeing in the US, seeing in North America generally, and as well as Europe, rules are beginning to be parsed out. And I've heard rules from India relating to the tax, but I was wondering if you could explain what the landscape looks like, and maybe you could break them into different time buckets of how things have occurred.
Yeah, I would actually bucket them into four time pieces over here, right? Let's say starting from 2013 to 2018. So after witnessing a lot of people buying cryptos in India, the Indian banking regulator issued various caution advisories by saying that, hey, you know, you are buying at your own risk, we are not regulating it, so you have to be careful if you are buying cryptos. And they continued to watch the volume of the trades in India. So that was the first regime from 2013 to 2018. Second regime, which was more of a banning regime, which was from 2018 to 2020. In April 2018, the banking regulator issued a circular asking its regulated entities, essentially bank and credit card companies, to stop providing banking services to the crypto players, which could be crypto users, exchanges. Although it's commonly understood that India banned crypto, but the crypto buy sell was not banned. It's like, you know, you cannot buy sell cryptos using Indian banking channels. But I believe that the crypto enthusiast in that regime from 2018 to 2020 may have continued using peer-to-peer channels to buy crypto, buy and sell cryptos through various P2P channels, through various crypto-to-crypto swaps. And since after this circular, the business of almost all the crypto exchanges came to a standstill. So various crypto exchanges challenged this circular of the banking regulator before the Supreme Court of India. After a brief, and I would say brief because it takes long time to get complete court process over in India. So after a brief fight for about 2 years, the Indian Supreme Court overturned the circular of the Reserve Bank of India. That judgment came in March 2020 and laid down the following very important propositions from the lens of lawyers. So Supreme Court said that there cannot be one classification of cryptos, as they could be currency, they could be securities, they could be payment tokens, or they could be commodities. However, as per the Supreme Court judgment, it said that crypto could be like money. If they are not money, they could be like money. And therefore, the Indian banking regulator has the regulatory jurisdiction over cryptos. And on the other hand, the Indian regulator could not show enough evidence to the Supreme Court that crypto trading is actually harming the Indian economy. So at the end, the Indian Supreme Court, although it's a 600-page judgment, I'm sharing a TLDR. At the end of the day, they applied the legal principle of doctrine of proportionality. They said that Indian regulators should have regulated the industry and not stopped it by cutting the umbilical cord of the bare essential banking services. So therefore, they overturned the so-called banning circular, which was issued by Indian regulators in April 2018. But, you know, even post this judgment, it was very challenging for the crypto exchanges and the crypto players to get their banking relationship on a smoother path with the bank. After a lot of discussions between the crypto players, banks and regulators, the Indian banking regulator finally issued a new circular in May 2021. That was after more than 1 year of the Supreme Court judgment, whereby they directed the banks to open relationship with the crypto exchanges after doing adequate KYC norms and ensuring that the foreign exchange laws are being complied with. So I guess the party started post April 2020 and the party became very wild and exciting post this May 2021 circular. So that was a very interesting regime from 2018 to 2020. Now from 2020 to 2021, these 2 years was a bit more kind of optically negative for India per se as such, for the industry, because in this period there were still some regulatory and legislative challenges. The regulators continued to be unhappy with the people continuing to buy and sell cryptos, and they used to make some statements comparing crypto trading with that of gambling and saying that cryptos have no underlying value, they are just like tulips. And in fact, in this period, government also introduced certain legislations banning crypto trading in India while agreeing to support the use case of blockchain per se. However, no such law was ultimately passed by the Indian Parliament. I actually have a personal story on one of this event. When I was taking up this job, or you know, moving from WhatsApp to CoinSwitch. So I took up this job sometime in October 2021 and I was to join in December 2021. In late November 2021, some information got leaked out that government is introducing a legislation to ban the crypto trading in India. And my wife, my father, everybody were extremely furious that, you know, I mean, you're moving out of WhatsApp, which is, or Facebook, which is one of the most iconic company, the most kind of sexiest job in India as a lawyer to be the lead counsel for WhatsApp in India. You're going to try your luck in startups. But I was fairly convinced about the growth of this industry. So I said, don't worry, believe me, I'm taking the right decision. And look, I held on to my belief and now I'm happy and feel proud to talking about exciting opportunity of crypto in India in your podcast. So I believe that the initial kind of learning cycle of regulator was there from 2020 to 2021. And things have changed a lot. And we'll discuss this a bit, I mean, later. But last but not the least in this regime, and I'll come to it from 2020-22 onwards, which is more positive, is that India also saw a lot of crime happening through cryptos. You know, people were getting duped and a lot of police complaints were being filed. So the National Police and Research Department in India in August 2021, they published an SOP, the Standard Operating Procedures, for the police to investigate crypto-related cybercrimes. So these were the kind of development which happened in these 2 years. The exciting part started from 2020-22 onwards, maybe after I joined the industry. Maybe I was lucky to bring some fresh air to the industry. It started with the Indian Advertising Self-Regulatory Body issuing the advertisement guidelines in Feb 2022, which said that any ads for crypto have to follow certain parameters, which I think is same everywhere. After that, very importantly, in April 2022, and I want to touch upon the tax aspect and want to correct your number. It's not 15%, it's very high. I'll come to it. So in April 2022, the tax laws were enacted for cryptos. And a formal definition of virtual digital asset was given to cryptos and NFT in the Indian regime. In terms of taxes, a flat tax of 30%, right, was introduced without any offset. So which means that if you have bought Bitcoin on one hand, you have bought, let's say, Ethereum on the other hand, you gained, okay, in say Bitcoin, you have to pay 30% on the gain. But if you have lost in Ethereum, you cannot offset the loss in the Ethereum with the gain of the Bitcoin. So Indian government said that you have to pay tax on your gains, but the loss is totally yours. And this percentage don't settle at 30%. If I'm an individual, the individuals whose income is beyond a particular threshold, there are surcharges on 30%, right? So if you are in the highest income bracket, your personal income tax could go up to 43-44%. So that's the kind of tax which you are looking at, only on the gains without any offset. Beyond taxation on the income or profits as such, every trade of crypto which gets executed on a crypto exchange, which could be an exchange or which could be a wallet to wallet transfer, the exchange or the service provider has to collect 1% tax at source, which the buyer or the seller has to adjust in his annual income tax return, which he or she may end up filing after 6 months to 1 year, and can claim the refund or deduction in about 18 months or more time. So which means that you are blocking your 1% liquidity for a long period of time. And this led to a significant drop in the trading volume, which could be somewhere between 80 to 90% drop in the trading volume. We are working a lot with the government to help them understand to put some sort of fair and equitable tax treatments, which I'll come to it when we talk about what initiatives we are taking along with the government. However, while the taxes are very draconian, the silver lining is that since the definition of virtual digital asset includes both cryptos and NFT, there is a silver lining for certain type of NFTs, which could fall outside of the definition of virtual digital asset or a VDA. And I think for lawyers, money is on the table on this issue. where they can do creative lawyering and help their client to design their NFT and its some tokenomics to ensure that it's not falling in the definition of VDA. Now, in addition to the taxation on the VDA as such, the same tax laws also introduced the concept or recognized the concept of CBDCs, right? And they said that the CBDCs issued by the government will be the official currency on the blockchain, and it will also act as a legal tender. And again, in April 2022, so a lot of things happens in India in this year. The Indian Cybersecurity Regulator in April 22 issued cybersecurity guidelines for various sectors, including for crypto exchanges or virtual asset service providers. Some of the guidelines were that for the very first time, KYC norms were formally introduced for crypto exchanges in the law. They were being mandated to maintain various logs and data access. They were also mandated to keep the records of transaction information, which can be used to reconstruct the entire kind of money trail or a transaction trail. And they were mandated to nominate a point of contact for liaison with the cybersecurity regulator. So after that, some sort of clarifications came, because when the crypto exchanges were required to withhold tax of 1%, some sort of clarifications came that how should they be doing it? What happens if it's a Indian rupee payer? What happens if it's a crypto to crypto payer? What happens if let's say underlying crypto is not having good liquidity in India? How can they liquidate to pay tax in Indian rupees? Because the Indian government was not accepting tax in cryptocurrencies. So we got some sort of good clarification. And last but not the least, in March 2023, crypto exchanges were brought under the prevention of money laundering laws here in India, and they were required to be registered with the Financial Intelligence Admin Unit as a reporting entity. So that's the kind of a TikTok on the regulatory landscape over last about 10 years.
Well, thank you for that background. It's very interesting to hear how different it's being approached in other jurisdictions around the world. The one thing I want to touch on is sort of the underlying rationale for these changes. Has it been industry lobbying? Why do you think it's been changing throughout the years in terms of the approach to, say, banning it to then overturning with the Supreme Court decision?
Well, you know, I would say that India always take a very cautious approach towards emerging technologies. And I think it is for a bona fide reason, because the Indian demography is totally different from the demography of any other country, right? Although we are the fifth largest economy, but we also have to serve more than 1.4 billion people in a short space of land. And a lot of issues come into place. And I mean, everybody in India is like aspirational. So government has to take a very balancing view. So I believe that I think it's also about how much time the government and regulator take to really understand about the industry nuances, learn from the good, bad and ugly happening in the industry outside of India. So I have seen that the shift in the government and enforcement, I mean, climate of cryptos in India. And I believe that the outlook of the government has changed, and for good, at least in the last 2-3 years. And, you know, as I said, that the approach of the government has changed from a bit negative to ban, to say that they are gambling, and now to do some soft regulation, put some sort of taxes, but, you know, at least recognizes, put them under the money laundering framework. And I think from also talking about banning the sector prior to 2022, now the Indian government is talking about collaboration with other countries to properly regulate the sector, especially under the Indian presidency of G20. And also, if you see that the press statement made by the Indian regulators and parliamentarians earlier was a bit negative, but now they're extremely kind of positive. I won't say that they said that we recognize the crypto as such, but the statement per se is very optimistic and positive. And I mean, it would be good to also see that Indian government, if not crypto, they are doing a lot of public good related experiments on blockchain. For example, they have started issuing the caste certificate, right, on blockchain. They have started some sort of projects are being worked on to support filing of the report to police station over blockchain, right? That will totally remove any corruption element in the investigation aspect. managing of land records, right? It has been extremely opaque. So it has slowly started to come on blockchain. Some experiments, you know, are on. And I think some sort of supply chain use case of distributing some essential seeds to the poor farmers are also being experimented on the blockchain. So that's where, I mean, government is actually also trying to implement and to learn it. And in fact, the curiosity of the Indian parliamentarians increased a lot last year in 2022. It's not about making the laws only. It's about how much time they're investing to learn and how much curious they are. You know, I mean, it's very exciting to note that in 2020-22, in Indian parliament, the parliamentarian asked more than 100 questions on crypto, NFT, Web3 and blockchain. And I mean, they value their time a lot. They don't ask any unnecessary questions, but more than 100 questions, right? I mean, on this industry, which means that government and parliamentarians are very, very curious to, I mean, learn about it. And I believe that, I mean, it's not about lobbying efforts per se from the industry, because industry also has to succeed. And I think we as industry owe some sort of knowledge sharing aspect with the government, help them understand various nuances, because we can also form a bridge between what's happening in India and what's happening over the world to bridge that gap. And lastly, I believe that, you know, fair and equitable taxes, while we know India is a great opportunity, good numbers of exchanges and users and traders and developers, but you're not seeing a lot of money on the table, a lot of projects, well-known big projects in India, which I believe that, you know, once we have a fair and equitable taxes on crypto, which is similar to that of the security markets or commodity trading, will give a big boost to the industry as such.
Yeah, those tax rules are unbelievable. And the fact that the volumes dropped 80 to 90% after is not surprising, but a very unfortunate effect of rules like that. And so what would the process look like to change those rules, Ashish? Is that something that is being looked into, could take years? What does that look like?
Well, I mean, it's a game of chance. So I think it all depends upon what position government will take. I think as a matter of legal process, the Income Tax Act has to be amended, and the amendment has to come via a legislative process in the parliament itself. So, I mean, technically, we have two sessions in a year wherein the income tax laws or your financial laws are being looked at by the Indian parliament. One is which comes into effect in April, second comes into effect in October. Okay, so we believe in either of April or October. I don't know which year. I hope it comes in 2023 October, because I mean, we will see a big growth. But they have to change the law. I believe that they have started to take some sort of baby step, because they didn't want to ban cryptos, but they wanted to earn from the trading, and they might want to really, I mean, discourage people to trade crypto. So unless they fully understand what kind of gains and harm it causes to the economy, I think the first baby step they have taken toward positivity is to bring crypto exchanges and various crypto service providers under the money laundering framework. So there, you know, people have to report how many users they have, what's the kind of transactions, travel rule they have to follow, counterparty diligence, filing of STR reports. So that will also give some deterrence on the bad actors to misuse crypto exchanges or crypto trading. Maybe after they get data, hopefully so we have started to comply with the regulations. Hopefully everybody will be ready to fully comply with the regulation in months to come. Post that, you know, we would make the filings with the FIU. Those reports will, I mean, surely go upstairs. And then government will have a holistic look from the reports coming from tax department, the report coming from the money laundering enforcer. And then, you know, they might take a very holistic view and want to make some decisions on taxes. So hopefully next year, keeping my fingers crossed.
And as general counsel of the largest exchange in India, I can imagine it's been a busy few years since you've started. Which regulators do you find you're working with the most? Because in North America, we've seen our securities regulators, and in Canada, we have different regulators in each province. And so it's become a very securities-focused area, particularly when it comes to the exchanges. There are also these anti-money laundering provisions and processes that need to be followed as well. But you mentioned the bank regulator having a large role in India. Is that still the case, or which regulator do you find you're working with the?
Yeah, so I think this is still hotly debated that which regulator should be regulating this sector. But I think the first question is that how Indian government would want to regulate this sector, right? And I think the cards are open on the table. It could be a banking regulator, it could be a securities regulator, it could be maybe the telecom regulator, it could maybe the information technology regulator. So, I mean, nothing has frozen. And I think people are first waiting for the government to take a stand. Our interactions, I would say that the industry is extremely active to engage with various stakeholders, whether this is banking, whether this is securities, whether this is taxes, whether this is Ministry of Finance. So I think all these kind of, let's say, your tax clarifications come, how exchanges can really cut the taxes and pay the government, have come out of deep interaction between industry players and the tax regulators, because your tax regulators need to understand our pain points, you know, our processes to issue various clarifications and regulations for collection of taxes. Similarly, when we have been brought under the reporting framework of the money laundering laws, right, we have to work very closely with the enforcement agencies to implement the laws. We have to also share our challenges. So, yeah, it's like with tax department, with the finance department, I mean, definitely various level of the government, because everybody is curious. And that's a testimony. In 2022, more than 100 questions were being asked on the floor of the parliament. So it's like whoever we feel would have some touch point to really take this industry forward, we go and discuss with them.
Thank you. Has your role shifted significantly since you began at CoinSwitch? I believe that was it 2021 when you started at CoinSwitch? And so has the day-to-day, does it look very different today than it did at that time?
Well, yes, because industry has changed a lot. You know, as I said that I started this company, my role in the company when there was an air of Indian government banning the industry. And today when we are chairing the G20 and crypto regulations are like important items on the table. So yeah, role has changed. I would say that the role started with handling more of, let's say, enforcement actions. Now it has shifted to really doing more investments into Web3 project, building new use cases. And also importantly, I mean, CoinSwitch has also started to pivot into multi-asset WealthTech platform, like a super app wherein you as an individual investor can buy cryptos, buy NFTs on one hand, and can also buy Indian stocks, US stocks, mutual funds, bank fixed deposit, interest-bearing fixed deposit, bonds on the other hand. So this has shifted in the sense a let's say 100% things on all things crypto to, let's say, maybe about 30-40% time is going on non-crypto related, you know, other asset class kind of a business. So I'm quite happy to be, like, you know, a very unique position in India to have experience of, you know, blockchain technology, your fintech and security tech. And, you know, in the past, I have experience of commerce tech and content tech. So all tech, all X-tech, blockchain and all. So this gives me a good kind of learning space to really give the best and the most safe kind of platform to Indians where they can buy any asset class which they choose to.
And you have had such an incredible career, and I want to talk on that in a second, but let's describe to people a bit more about CoinSwitch. And CoinSwitch was founded in 2017. In 2021, it had a $2 billion valuation. Investors like Coinbase, A16Z, Paradigm, Sequoia, and Tiger Global, many others that people have heard of, especially in North America. Could you describe, you mentioned, you know, you're a multi-asset tech platform, but could you describe what CoinSwitch offers, maybe reiterate what you described before, but then how people access it and what CoinSwitch looks like as a platform today?
So, I mean, currently we are only offering investment in crypto assets. So we started our business as a retail crypto broking arm, wherein, you know, the whole philosophy was that investment in crypto is a very complex aspect, right? And in India, we wanted to make investment in crypto as easy as buying food on any food app, right? So that was the motto of the founders. So for the large part of, you know, our business, we have been a retail crypto broker. We also launched our pro trading platform wherein high volume traders can also buy and sell cryptos, do arbitrage in between various exchanges. To increase liquidity on our platform, we also launched our own crypto exchange. But now we are in the process of getting into other asset classes. And fingers crossed, I think we should be, by end of this year, may add two more asset classes, which would be, let's say, mutual fund, fixed deposits and all. But yeah, eventually, you know, we would want us to be one-stop shop, safe and secure, very user-friendly to buy any asset which you choose to buy.
And is that mainly done through the app, through the website? How do people typically access the platform?
Yeah, it's through app.
Through app, okay.
Yeah, we have about 20 million users. Yeah, so it's through app only, yeah.
It must have been a difficult decision for you to leave WhatsApp, and you were at Netflix prior to then. It seems like you have had this ability to see where opportunities are and take this step where some people might stay comfortable in a previous role. Have you always had that curiosity and that ability to do things that other people might consider to be maybe riskier or to take advantage of where opportunities are in your career?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be a very templatized kind of lawyer. I always like to learn new things, right? And I think this has been trend in my entire career of about 22 years. In fact, if I were to spend 30 seconds, I started my career way back in 2002 when the ATMs were started to be deployed in India, right? And banks were embracing new technology on data warehousing, check truncation, electronic check transfers. So I started working for this US multinational called as NCR Corporation, although I worked with them for just 2 years. So it started from that infancy stage. Then I started working for eBay in 2004 when they just entered in India, when India only had 3 million internet users. And today India has close to about a billion. And you know, at that point of time, I mean, nobody knew how e-commerce work, and there were a lot of, I mean, negativity, FOMO, FUD around e-commerce. So build that ecosystem, build the banking technology ecosystem from a legal side, build the e-commerce ecosystem from a legal side. Then, you know, I went to work with Reliance Jio, which is India's largest telecom operator, when they were actually on the drawing board. They just got their 4G license. So help them really build their plan, sign multi-billion dollar telecom deals, stuff like that. So, I mean, it's not about I can crystal gaze. I am not a magician, right? I just feel that, yes, I mean, this is something new. It will help me to come out of my kind of day-to-day mundane job. Laws have been set, and I am not a great lawyer who can interpret the existing laws. I'm a lawyer who can anticipate the problem in ambiguity and try to solve the problem, build the ecosystem, and leave behind a legacy. So, I mean, this was a natural kind of progression of my career, and I'm happy for that.
Yeah, and it has been an incredible career that you've had. So congratulations for that. And then in terms of what is next, and I know you don't have a crystal ball that you can look into, but I can imagine you've seen the landscape in India change over time. What do you think the next couple years look like? And if you did have to make a prediction of what the landscape looks like in India, where do you see it most likely settling in terms of how digital assets are regulated? And I know that's a broad question, so perhaps we can just focus on what the regulation around the assets itself looks like and how that interacts with exchanges.
Well, I think the regulations will... So your first point is that, is the industry here to stay, or are we staring at a prohibition or a ban? I don't think, although I cannot predict, I don't think India will ban crypto per se. So regulations are inevitable. It is just a matter of time. And if you see in G20, the statements made by the Indian finance ministers and all, saying that, like, India alone cannot regulate this industry, right? The world has to come together, and there has to be a collaborative effort across the world to regulate. The world has started to regulate. We are seeing MiCA, We are talking about Dubai, we're talking about UK, we're talking about Singapore, various countries. In fact, maybe at some point of time, US will also make some good regulations. So India cannot be left behind. When they are seeing that a lot of countries are making regulation, they will make. It is not if, it is when. What type of regulations may be made? I think it would be a mix of, now let's say, historically, if you see information technology laws, if you see the data privacy laws. So it is actually borrowing all the learnings, good things, bad things, victories and mistakes of countries outside India. So, you know, we would like to learn how things happen outside of India, maybe then, okay, tweak it to our own demography, add some newness to it. So it won't be totally different from what you are seeing outside of India, but the regulations will, I mean, definitely have a local flavor because our country is different from other country. Its opportunities and challenges and demography is different. And government is extremely thoughtful of that, and it will make a good law which will serve the need of the people, serve the need of the industry, and also serve the need of the government and security.
So it sounds like you are optimistic. I'm glad to hear that.
I bet my career on that.
Well, no, that's great. And in terms of the regulation in India and what you've seen to date, do you think there's anything that the regulators in India have done that other countries can learn from? I want to focus on the positives that you've seen through the years of regulation to come out. And even the Supreme Court decision obviously is a massive example of where the rules are followed, regardless of the merits of or the feelings of the regulators. Is there anything that you look back on and you think other countries, and for those listening in North America and Europe, can learn from what's happened in India?
Yeah, so I think Indian regulators, as I said, are very cautious. Okay, they don't want to take any knee-jerk reaction to anything new happening. Now, I mean, let me go back to 2008, right? The financial crisis. India was least impacted thanks to the conservative nature of regulations, and which are good, right, by the Indian banking regulators, right? You see how the Indian fintech laws are being built by the Indian banking regulators. They are conservative, but they are very, very progressive, and they are helping the total financial inclusion growth in India. And there are plenty to say, I would say, whether it is environmental laws, whether this is basically Indian corporate laws, Indian security markets laws. So everything is like built very slowly. It's like, you know, tortoise and a rabbit, right? So we walk slow, but we walk very consistently and we win the race, right? Without impacting the demography. If I would just give one example, it would be 2008 financial crisis. And I mean, we didn't have to face, I mean, that much. And also see the steps taken by the Indian government, I mean, during pandemic, right? We are now the fastest growing economy in the world. You know, people are talking about depression. We are talking about 6.5% year-on-year growth in the GDP. There is a lot of inflation across the world. We're not facing that type of the inflation I am seeing in India. I mean, I live in Mumbai and I work in Bangalore. The kind of inflow of the talent, the kind of startup, the kind of job creation happening. So I believe that some thoughtful regulations, actions, activities must have been taken by Indian government, I mean, during pandemic. That's why we are seeing all the benefits now. So, yeah.
Well, that's a great answer, Ashish. Thank you. I wanted to touch on projects in the crypto space, and I know you work in an exchange, and that's largely obviously revolving around tokens and the trading and assets in that regard. But are there other aspects of the digital asset space that you are seeing built out that you find interesting or you want to see built out in the future? Essentially, what opportunities do you see arising with this technology? Doesn't necessarily have to be in India specifically, but just in the world generally.
Look, I think, I mean, blockchain being the core technology underlying cryptos, right? So I think it's more coming out of blockchain rather than crypto and Web3. Blockchain is like the synonymous of transparency and openness. So anything in the world which thrives on corruption, anything in the world which thrives on opaqueness, if you bring the element of blockchain, this will serve huge benefit to the human society. It could be anything. It could be distribution of currencies. I mean, not only Indian government, most of the governments in the world have recognized the benefit of blockchain in international settlement of payments, right? The CBDCs are on the blockchain, right? The supply chain, the hospital records, education records. In India, we are talking about filing of police complaints, right? I mean, we are talking about distribution of the caste certificate. So everything which had some element of opaqueness, non-transparency, put a layer of blockchain, it will change the world. And I think crypto would have some sort of, I would say, a complementary use case, because I believe that both are complementary to each other. The success of the blockchain will also depend upon how you're building your tokenomics and the taxonomy and lexicology on tokenomics. So blockchain is a real use case, and crypto fuels the growth of blockchain. I think it's important even for regulators, especially in India, because they talk, say, oh, blockchain is good. We understand blockchain. We want to promote blockchain, but cryptos are bad. I think this is not the case, right? If you want to really build the real use cases of blockchain, you need to embrace crypto and you need to find some balance. So yeah, whether it's India, whether it is elsewhere in the world, I believe blockchain has a huge use case in India. It will really, I believe the time India takes to grow from a $3 trillion economy to $5 trillion could reduce by almost 50% if we properly embrace all these new technology. In fact, AI, ChatGPT kind of LLMs and all, if they can be used, I personally feel that if I were to give something back to the society, right, as a lawyer, being in India and see the justice system, although is very good, but this still needs a lot of improvement, especially for the poor class. So if I were to do, one thing for the economy or, for the people, for India, I would actually say that how can I use recent technologies of AI and blockchain to solve the common legal problem of a common man in India?
And that's a lot of people in India, and it's obviously a massive population with massive opportunity for new technology adoption. The last question for you, Ashish, and thank you for joining me. It's been a great conversation and so interesting to learn about the approach, and especially that Supreme Court decision, I think, is such a great example of where rules changed on a dime, and we're seeing important cases go through the courts in the US and other countries around the world. And India is a good example of what can happen after that and how the rules can be shifted. The last question for you is more personal, and I'd love to know a little bit more about your career and if there's any habits or advice that you would give to people when speaking with young attorneys interested in new technology, interested in building a legal career based on the things you have experienced.
Yeah, so look, if you are a law graduate, a trained lawyer, you know how to learn the law, how to interpret it. I think what we need to spend time is that how well we are understanding new technologies. Right. I don't know how many lawyers are actually going behind how blockchain works. Right. I don't know how many lawyers are actually opening their blockchain wallet, how many lawyers are minting NFTs. Right. And similarly, people talk about PT or Bard and OpenAI. How many of us are actually using it? I don't know how many of us have actually paid $20 per month to OpenAI to use the GPT-4, which solves. So I think it's more, I would say that smell the soil. Okay. Understand how law applies to the various technology and embrace technology. Sit with the kind of technocrats, sit with the business team, understand what's going on. Be on Twitter, be on Telegram, be on various channels, right? I'm also learning Python coding, right? So why not, right? So I think the more time you spend outside of your legal boundaries will make you more efficient lawyer for the world. And last but not the least, do something for the humanity. Give back to your profession. So that element should always be there. Whether knowledge, whether new project, whether some donation, whether some scholarship and sponsorship, give back to society. You owe that to them.
And I saw you were assisting and teaching a course on Web3 and crypto. I saw that on LinkedIn.
Yeah, this is coming out of more personal experience. I was building my team. I've hired top lawyers, very, very smart lawyers, but it has been very difficult because I think like everybody talks about Web3, crypto, blockchain, AI, but I think your legal nuances are not very well understood. So I want to make sure that we create a future-ready army of lawyers to help India embrace all these new technology. Because if, I mean, lawyers are not trained, they don't understand, they can't really, you know, augment or help the government to shape laws, help the court to interpret laws, and help the police to really, you know, catch the criminals. So yeah, that's what I have taken it on myself to really train the people and build a good army of lawyers.
Agreed. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I thought that was a very great conversation and an overview of everything that's happened in India from the crypto side of regulation. And we'll have to have you on again when new laws come out. Do you expect to see anything on the horizon that people should keep an eye out for when it comes to India over the next couple months or years?
I would say that let's wait for the money laundering regulations to come in place and, you know, exchanges to file the reports. Let's wait how the G20 presidency of India is ending, what next step they are deciding on crypto regulations. So I am not anticipating anything to happen in next few months. It's a slow but steady kind of journey for us. I would put a reminder of, let's say, maybe January 2024 or maybe February 2024, not before that.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll chat again at that time. Ashish, thank you for joining me today.
And thank you, Jacob. I am also learning a lot from your podcast. I have been hearing everything, and I hope I have been able to give some perspective about India and help your listeners to understand what a great opportunity India gives on crypto. And let's work towards making crypto very successful everywhere in the world.
I completely agree. And it's amazing and an honor to hear that people like yourself are listening to the podcast all the way in India. So thank you for saying that and for joining me today. This was a great conversation.
Thank you.